I would like you to join me in welcoming our guest today. Her name is Samantha Walls. And Samantha Walls is the editor of an important guide, if you will. It is entitled Blended, Writers on the Step Family Experience. Samantha Walls, welcome to Mind Talk.
Thank you. I'm so pleased to be part of it.
Now, Samantha, you have pulled together a series of stories actually written by people who are living in step families, and I believe you have some blended family experience yourself. Why write about blended families? Is that an important topic today?
There are so many blended families, with more being formed all the time, but there are some how-to books out, but there isn't a current anthology out, and I feel like stories are really the best way to help people find some solutions, or at least some things they can try. And the stories are so varied, the writers are so varied, that I'm hoping that readers will find several stories in there that resonate with them and their particular situation.
Well, certainly Mind Talk believes that stories are the way to go, because that's what we're all about, is telling lots of different stories so that, as you say, people can find their own way and really draw their own conclusions, but have the stories as a backdrop to perhaps help them transition into thinking about something in a different way. According to a 2011 report, there are 95 million adults who are in a step relationship in a blended family. That's a lot of folks, 95 million. And that's from 2011. Are there any more updated studies than that one?
One that I think is probably related was the 2013 Pew study, the same research center you were quoting, and they were looking at the increase in remarriages, and if remarriages are increasing, then certainly we are seeing even more step families today. And in addition, there are all those people that were raised in step families, and maybe they have a traditional family now, but things come from their experience being raised that way. So I think our numbers are really, really high, and I really want to honor those people and support them, and I felt like this anthology was a way to do that.
Well, you, in fact, Samantha, are a member of a blended family yourself, but you also formerly wore the hat of being a family therapist, so you come to this conversation with experience on both sides of the coin, if you will.
And actually, I have blended family on both sides of my personal coin, because I have stepchildren who are grown, and my older son is also part of a blended family. So my I have grandchildren and step-grandchildren from my older son, as well as from my husband. My second marriage.
It's sounding like there's almost no such thing as a typical step family. Are they all unique and different, or do they tend to follow in patterns?
I think that they share some unique challenges, but I'm glad you asked the question, because it's really important to recognize we have so many kinds of blended families. We have the traditional father, mother, children, but then we have same-sex couples increasingly with children, and we have maybe a domestic partner, boyfriend, girlfriend, rather than a marriage, but that are certainly becoming the stepmother or stepfather figure in a committed relationship. As we move out of, you know, society's single image of families, then blended families take more different shapes, more different configurations. And the book and Blended makes a big effort to recognize that there are all different configurations for step families, but they do all have some commonalities in that they're coming in with society's kind of the mythology of the evil stepmother, evil stepfather. They're coming in with some kind of history. The kids have been through something. They've been through a divorce. They've been through a death. They're feeling loss, displacement, sometimes jealousy. They have maybe visitation schedules, their own kind of grieving to do. So
it's huge and it's complicated.
It's very complicated, and that's why I'm very glad that we have 30 writers, and we could have, if I had had, you know, not limited space, there are so many wonderful stories that I couldn't use, and if any of those authors happen to be tuning in, I know that there were wonderful stories that aren't in this particular bound book.
Well, maybe this can be the beginning of sort of a series, because as you've said, I mean, we are not at any loss for numbers of blended families, unique blended families, and traditional blended families, whatever that looks like. I almost think that the traditional blended family is the unique blended family. But, you know, there's something that I'm noticing even as you and I are talking now, which is that I am going back and forth between talking about step families and talking about blended families. And blended seems so comforting and warm and affirming, and step sort of seems like, I don't know, there's just something, well, as you said, there's something kind of negative. There's a negative connotation just about the connotation of being a step-parent or a step-child or a step-daughter. What do we need to do to change that?
I really love that you brought that up. Feel Press changed my title, and I'm really glad they did. Actually, one of our contributors created this, mostly this title, Kezia Willingham, who has a beautiful story in there. It started out called Stepping Up, and there are, interestingly, I learned yesterday that some research was quoted to me about community families of color that don't use the term step.
Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering if Hispanic families, because of the way their extended families are so embracing, maybe they don't. And some of my authors carefully avoided the use of the word step and wanted it really, really clear that that wasn't an acceptable word in their household with their blended family. They didn't want it in writing, whatever. And even one was like really worried about the part of the title that is writers on the step family experience. So maybe blended sounds more embracing, whereas step sounds kind of one step aside. And I know in introducing my stepdaughters, who I dearly love, I have so often wanted to just say my daughter, but I didn't want to belittle the relationship because they all have a biological mother as well. But they just felt like daughter, and like I didn't want to disparage or disrespect them in any way.
So it really does get to be kind of complicated on lots of levels. And probably maybe it deserves more than one conversation within the family, even with the children. How do you want me to introduce you? Because, you know, I wonder how folks feel being introduced as the stepdaughter. You know, it's like folks used to be introduced as the adoptive daughter, and now it's, you know, the stepdaughter, and it's all seeming to be one step removed from the core family, and not sure that that's a healthy way to walk into what is indeed a blended relationship.
I love the idea and would love, I don't know why I just haven't had that simple conversation with the girls. I have a darling story, though, I think that's kind of related in my son's blended family, where the step-grandchildren and my son's children, who were all like 5 to 10, those four, they decided together at the dinner table that they would call his girlfriend mom and him dad, and all four kids would do that. And I just thought that was a great solution, to leave it to the child. We also have a gorgeous story in the book by Betsy Fassbinder, where, Who Will This Be to Me, where she gives her six-year-old, soon-to-be stepson, the space to decide what he wants to call her. His mother has died, and he decides, she gives him the space, even though it's very hard for her, for him to decide. And in the end, he says, you know, if I call you Betsy, it's safer, because if I call you Mom, you might go away.
It's a really poignant story, because that's his experience. His mom went away, and clearly he was connected enough to her that he didn't want her to go away, too.
And if somebody had said, you need to call Betsy Mom, then he would not have been able to have that feeling really honored, which brings up another point I really want to make, which is, I think that too often we don't realize how much young children understand how responsible they feel. They are resilient, yes, but I see all the time little kids that need to be heard more than they are. And if it's not a parent, then it could be a trusted friend. There's always professional therapy, but we just need to really make sure that even if they're young, even if they're 3 or 4 or 5, that we are really talking to them about their feelings and how they need to see this family work.
Absolutely. And you're right. I'm glad you bring up the point about children feeling responsible, and they get so confused. And, you know, a lot of times, even to this day, despite all the wisdom that we theoretically have, there's a mixture of parents who teach their children as short adults. And then there are a mixture of parents who teach their 15, 16-year-olds as though they're 2 and 3-year-olds. So, it really is important that we really pay attention to what's going on within the family. You know, one of the things that also came up for me as I was reading the story about Betsy, I certainly know that there are parents, perhaps from an older generation, who would absolutely not allow a child to call them by their first name. And so then you get into that sort of potential battle between the parents' values with respect to respect and what that means to the parent, and the child feeling comfortable and affirmed and loved.
Yeah, and that's just, I don't know what I'd do with that. That's just, it is. I just think it's not going to honor that child as much as would be most helpful.
Well, yeah, I tend to agree with you. But, you know, maybe blended families. Now, you used to wear the hat of a family therapist. So from that perspective, do you think that blended families should routinely engage in some sort of counseling, even if it's just for a session or two, or longer, if longer is necessary? Do you think that should be a routine practice?
I think there are people so opposed to, quote, help, and those people hopefully would find some other third party. Some of those people would be comfortable talking to someone in their church. Maybe some people, their kids have a good relationship with a counselor or teacher at school. I do think, of course, I have a strong preference. I totally believe in professional counseling, and you can get referrals from people you know, so because counselors vary, doctors vary, you know, whatever vary. You can find someone that has helped your friend, and I have a deep belief in that, but I do acknowledge that there are people that just isn't part of their world, but I would hope that some other trusted adult would be. There are just things that aren't comfortable, especially early on, when the family is first coming together. There aren't necessarily the relationships to support that kind of communication.
And, you know, in this kind of situation, it's not about the family being good or bad, dysfunctional or functional. It's just about lots of different personalities coming together for the first time in a way that is new for all of the people involved.
I love that. I might throw out, I've, of course, read a lot of websites with advice to step parents, the how-to kind of approach versus my story approach, and I'm not invalidating that at all. But one thing that consistently they recommend is, as the family's first coming together, if there's a disagreement from the parenting style, and I'm big on parenting styles, if there's a disagreement, that the bio parent gets the first, you know, the word with their child. And that's, I think, helpful, because the other parent has to form the relationship. And eventually it will happen. We have, I just think, a delightful story, the Two Dogs, Three Cats, Two Girls, Ellen Sussman story that starts the book.
Why don't you tell that story?
Oh, it's so cute. So Neil came into their lives. She wasn't expecting a relationship, you know, the great story. She got one. He came into their, he brought in a lot of animals, and she brought in the two girls. And it took them some time, but by the end, as you know, as the family evolved, the children learned to love Neil, to depend on him, and he filled in a lot of really important functions that, because two people are more than one person, and they usually balance each other, either opposite sex or same sex couples, by the way. So it's a story, you know, in the end, the girls are ostensibly are now adult. They were young. They're now adult, and they're coming home ostensibly to cuddle with the animals. But Neil is there as well and has become a very important fixture in their life. He gave it, you can tell from this short story, that he gave it time. He accepted whatever was going on and gave it time, and they developed this relationship.
In your view, you know, giving something like this time is really a skill, I would say, and certainly something that needs to happen in families, period, certainly, but certainly in blended families. Yeah. I'm wondering if you've got two people who really have different parenting styles. They love each other, they want to be together, but their parenting styles are really different and indeed incompatible. Does it make sense for them to still try to blend that family, or would you rather see them wait, or should they just plow ahead? Or
I had a while ago a book published actually on parenting styles. This is a beloved topic of mine. This is, I think, and I have to speak to nuclear families, to traditional families on this, because in blended families, I think there's kind of a rule of thumb that the bio parent gets the first say, and you have to figure that out. But I think that parents in either traditional or blended families really are going to need professional help for different values. They're going to, I had that major struggle in my first marriage, and it helped to get some counseling, and I think whatever style you come from, there's at least a more positive way to do it. If you're are you pretty authoritarian, there's still a more positive way for it, to use rewards instead of punishments, to be really simplistic about this, on down the line and looking at different styles. I think it takes a third party helping you find. There may be couples that can come to compromise on their own, but it's something that just needs to be looked at, because otherwise you just have arguing and tension all the time. Some parents manage to have a united front in front of the children and then talk about it together away from the children. That's another good solution, but a lot of people can't manage that
one. That's true. Samantha, we're going to take a break, and when we come back, folks, we will continue. We'll be right back. Samantha, we've been talking about parenting styles. I'd like to shift gears a little bit towards the children's personality styles. There's a story that you tell, the step-family honeymoon, which from where I sit sounds like a nightmare, period. But but seems to me that the family, I don't know about the idea of newly formed step families going away together on a quote unquote honeymoon as the first as the first trip as a new couple. Well, actually as a new family. What do you think? I mean, there are certainly lots of different views about that.
Well, this was a young couple, and remember, well, you might be really young, but you're so idealistic in your 20s versus older, and so I can see people trying it. I think that your best way you're going to work out a blended family is for the couple to be really, really strong with each other, and so I would want a honeymoon away for them, but also, maybe financially they needed to do this. Maybe, you know, I don't know all the reasons that went behind their decision. I do know that blended families, especially with young children, can really have a challenge finding time together and have to make sure that happens, because in this is a couple that is still together because their relationship outside raising the children is so solid. It's really, really critical for the father and mother, whatever step they are, to really nurture their own relationship.
There are so many challenges, as we know, to families and family growth, you know, in a quote-unquote traditional family, so that certainly in a blended family, it just gets to be that much more complicated. And for the parents to have their own strength with each other, it makes sense to me what you're saying, that they really need to have a secure relationship, because they're going to be challenged in a different way. And it could be on lots of different levels. It could be a different way from what they're used to from their original family. It could be different within this dynamic. One of the things that came up in the stepfamily honeymoon story was the way in which the husband really favored his birth daughter and continued to do so in a lot of ways. Can you share one of the experiences on the honeymoon with the husband and his birth daughter?
So one of the challenges that they faced was that those parents were in different financial situation also, different in what they could offer and different in what they had offered, and so he came with a ton of. They went to a beach. And he brought umbrellas, sunglasses, flippers, you know, a room full of stuff. And she brought shovels and pails, and that was plenty. And it just was reflected in all sorts of ways that this had been a, his daughter was an only child, and he had a lot of financial resources. And I don't know about the relationship between that, the child and the bio mother, and where that might have been reinforced. But she simply didn't have the resource to do that. Her kids weren't used to it. They had completely different expectations in terms of what a child could adjust to. She was like, well, the kids will get used to whatever. And he was, well, this is the way it needs to be. And so, you know, we're back to difference in parenting styles. We're also back to, we're also at a reality. And Carrie Cohen does a beautiful job of this also in her story, I Love You More, where it's just kind of natural in a lot of times for you to just have a stronger feeling for your own children for a while. You have kind of a mama bear. Maybe there's a papa bear feeling. I know about a mama bear feeling. But then you can just have incredible devotion for your stepchildren. And I see that with my son's girlfriend, by the way, incredibly devoted to my granddaughters as well as her children. It just, again, is a huge variation. There are also parents in, new in the marriage who've never had children, and this is an opportunity to finally have a child. And I want to, you know, give some space for that, too, that that can be a wonderment. A blended family can be very positive. Sometimes, like Sue Sanders' story, the father comes in and the stepfather comes in, and he's a father figure that the child really needs. And so it's called My Official Family, not My Official Family, and it worked beautifully for them. So I also want to say, yeah, they have challenges, but some of these families are working really beautifully.
The issue of one of the parents having never had children and really relishing the idea of becoming a blended family so as to have an opportunity that he or she perhaps has never had and longed for, it's an interesting twist on the step family, if you will, concept. Because I think when we think about families, we just assume with a step family, with a blended family, that they're both coming with a child or children. And perhaps this is a different dynamic when one has never had children and the other one brings children into the new marriage, into the new relationship.
We have stories in blended that treat that. In Step at the Wedding, Mary Faith Powers is one of those. So welcomed a child in her life. Just so welcomed this granddaughter. So I also know we have a story of a stepmother that never wanted to be a mother, and the daughter that kind of expected her to be a stepmom, but she was really difficult. And Epiphany by Sally Wagner Brown. So it can work both ways. Some new parents maybe don't want that child, and some are like, at last I get a child. And so again, we have that huge variety, whereas in a traditional family, more likely there's been some agreement on the idea of having children. For some people, it might be, well, this is part of the package deal. I didn't have much choice.
Yeah, so again, going back to the parents and their styles and their values, they need to have some critical sets of conversations, it seems to me, ideally before they blend families. I know that's not always the case, but it certainly sounds like, mm-hmm. particularly with a blended family, it would be
really,
really important. Yeah,
really important. And I, of course, my bias again, I would love to see them talk with a professional about that, because they need to get, somebody needs to help them get through all the layers of their feelings, because here they're like, yeah, I can do it. I love this birth. This is the love of my life. And then they need to get, somebody needs to help them get through all the layers to whether they really want a child, or they always wanted to be childless and this is an interference. We'll send them off to boarding school pretty soon. I did flip back to The Sound of Music there, the movie. But yeah, so I would hope that there would be very direct, honest conversations before the families blended.
Now, there is a story that is in the book, Mother Nature's Perfect Blend, A Work in Progress. And that's a really interesting story in that both of the women left their husbands to be with each other. So they left their heterosexual relationships to be in a same-sex relationship. How did that work out for them, for the husbands, and for the children?
Oh, and I've been able to meet Liz. She's really great. Elizabeth Kingsley, the author. The children are doing well, it sounds like. They, the parents, the two women, are very different in what they offer the children and can listen to different kinds of issues and help with different kinds of homework. And it just seems like they have been able to build relationships, that both parents, both women have been able to build relationships with all the children, all four children. The one father is very involved, and that has the author, it's not the author's husband, it's the other husband, and the author gives him a lot of credit. He's financially generous and very involved. Her husband didn't make that same choice, and that's been a struggle for them. And they don't make any bones about it being a hard job to blend the family, but they find that they do balance each other. And again, there are all those relationships. Candace Walsh had a similar experience in, and I have her story in and out of step also in the final section of the book, Reflections. They, again, have found that she and her partner bring different strengths to working with her children.
You know, as we're talking about these different kinds of blended families, it's not just the immediate families that come together, but it's the families of the families and the friends of the families. And, you know, you can go from being, you know, one of three or four to all of a sudden you feel like you're part of a cast of thousands. And then how do the other friends, you know, who's it? Wow. It's a lot.
It is a lot. I think, and I don't have anything to back this up, but there are so many blended families today that I think that there are going to be a lot of peers that are kind of going through similar things, and that's going to help the children. And there will be peers for the parents, and that will help the parents, because we all need our friends as well as our spouses or boyfriends, girlfriends. I think that those that went through this a few generations ago probably have more scars from it. I know that there's a gorgeous story by Gigi Rosenberg where she was supposed to not let anybody know that she had this father, and she has really felt, you know, the misery of that experience. She calls her story My Secret Father. I think that now it's just more accepted to be a blended family.
Absolutely. more accepted and much more common. There was an interesting story about the child who kept waiting for mom's husband to leave. Can you just take a couple of minutes and share that one with us?
I loved that. Family role play.
Yes.
Oh, my gosh. That's our Canadian story, by the way. Shout out for Canada. The mother, it's a funny story, too. Oh, everybody, it's worth buying the book to read that story. That is such a delightful, funny story. But anyway, she was a little bit worried about her son, and so she took him into therapy, and he revealed to the therapist that he was waiting for this man to go. This man had married his mother, but she had been single for quite a while, so of course she'd had some men in and out, and she was a little mortified. But it was wonderful, you know, back to what we talked about earlier, it was wonderful that that got to come out, the fear of that young man, that this man would leave too, so he didn't dare love him too much.
And again, it's such an important part of the dynamic in a family that would very easily have lots of impact on how he would interact with mom, with stepdad or dad, however he sees him.
Yeah.
And if they didn't know, that could have been a mess very, very quickly.
So it was really, really, really a good thing that she got some professional help that, you know, like I said, we talked about that before. We can't talk about it too much. We cannot encourage people too much. Whatever works for them, to talk to a professional, my bias, but to talk to someone, to read something like Blended, which so that you can see the shared experience. Make sure that everybody gets to really share their feelings, because you're absolutely right. Those feelings are the context for all their interactions.
And, you know, just as a mini aside, we spoke earlier about the power of stories, and I commented that that's kind of the same approach that I take here at Mind Talk, because stories can really open up, I would say, space for people to recognize, number one, and so powerfully, they're not alone. And whatever it is they're dealing with, there's at least one other person on the planet who's kind of been where they are, may not be in exactly the same way, but has been there. And so that idea that you're all that you learn through a story that you're not alone, that you are human, and that people have challenges all day long, and here's the way one person worked with the challenge. Here's the way somebody else worked with the challenge. It really also opens up one's mind to challenge oneself, perhaps to think more broadly about whatever the issue is that they're dealing with.
I think that's great. I also would welcome, I was thinking, the book has a page on Facebook. I know everybody's not on Facebook, but for those who are, I would welcome people to share their stories on that page. I kind of tried to set that up a couple times. I think it's so, so helpful. There are also some websites like Step Family has a category on Mom Cafe, and there are other websites where they can share their stories. I think it's so helpful. We do. I just think of all the ways that I can just feel like I'm the only one. I mean, it's just kind of a human condition that not only are we in community, but we're stuck with ourselves 24/7, and we can get into kind of a space of not realizing that there are all those resources out there, and there are all those shared experiences, and lots of people that would reach out to and support us.
Absolutely. Samantha, we're going to take a break, but when we come back, the first thing I want you to do is to tell us about the Facebook page, because although everybody's not on Facebook, most people are on Facebook. Folks,
okay.
This is Pamela Brewer, and you are listening to Mind Talk. I am having a wonderful conversation with Samantha Walls, who is the editor of Blended, Writers on the Step Family Experience. We'll be right back. Samantha, what is that Facebook address?
If they will go to their page and then just put in, you know, they'll know the little box where you'd go find whatever. It's the name of the book.
Okay.
So blended. The URL, actually, I have a friend looking up the URL because it's a little different, but they can, once they're on their page, they will find that. They will find Blended Writers on the Step Family Experience, and that will, that's, you know, we called that.
Okay, terrific.
But I will, in a second, also have the link for you.
Okay.
I'll certainly send it to you later.
Let me ask you about some of the, perhaps, traditional problems that can show up in blended families. And now I'm asking you to really draw on your hat as a former family therapist. I wonder if when families get together, there isn't an assumption that the holidays, the celebrations, that they're going to continue to be the way they were, because that's just how everybody does it. I would imagine that that would show up and could get some folks into trouble. What's been your experience?
My experience is that we do come in with all of the history, and we do it in a traditional family too. And so every step of the way, we really need to talk about it. And any holiday, any birthday, any kind of celebration, everybody there is going to have a whole tradition around it. Whether it's when the adults finally gather and they just happen to have the children along for the 4-year-old's birthday, or, you know, whatever the situation. And so again, those two parents in that blended family need to have a talk, and it's very complicated, because then you're talking about extended family, and then you're talking about I'm just interrupting myself because now I can give you the links.
But okay,
can I go back to the Facebook question and then
sure.
and then revisit the celebration
sure.
question?
Sure.
So I mentioned it's Blended:Writers on the Step Family Experience for, you know, the Facebook part that they enter, and they'll go right to the page. The actual URL is facebook.com/blendedstories/, and then the details that would get you to whatever piece of that page is. But if they just do slash blended stories, capital S on stories, they'll get to it for
the
URL.
That's great. And you
back to celebrations. No, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, I wanted to remind folks that you have encouraged folks to share their own blended family stories on Facebook if they would like.
I would love to have stories on that page. I have, I'm just happy to be able to say that on your program. I've said it on the page, but then you have to already be on the page to know it.
Exactly.
I would love it to become a forum for families.
Wonderful.
Because it's so helpful to share. It's so helpful to everybody else to hear somebody's story.
Absolutely. All right, so let's talk about go back to the assumption that many people will walk into a blended family with, which is that the traditions that they had in their family will be now the traditions that will go forward in the newly constituted family.
So there's a lovely story in the book called The Angel Steps Down, where Elizabeth Gerlach deals with that and picking it out a Christmas tree. And again, it can be a birthday, it can be any celebration. It's going to be compromised. There's no way out. And the scheduling is a huge issue. When I taught this step parenting workshop, I got just flooded with, what do you do about this and this and this and this? It, just in terms of which parents you see, my own stepkids deal with that. Which family do you visit? Which parents, which grandparents, which Thanksgiving dinner, which, you know, whatever. And so that really has to be set out. And I would love to see that happen actually in a family council, if it were ideal, so that the kids felt, the more we can involve the kids, I know earlier when I was like torn with my Facebook thing, I mentioned the parents have to really talk about it, but I'd also like it brought into a forum with the children so that this everybody in the blended family feels like they have a voice in how things will look. And then it will be, everybody needs to be honored before anybody can give up their own agenda, if that makes sense.
It makes perfect sense.
So if everybody feels like they have a voice and know everybody heard what was important to them and that's honored, then maybe then they can start to say, well, we can do this and that. And in terms of family council, it can be some formal thing if you do that. It can be a topic around the dinner table. You can all go out for ice cream, you know, whatever works for family, but so that everybody gets to say something on that focused topic.
That just sounds so important to do.
Yeah, it really is. And then I guess another thing, I don't know, more a positive way to say it, but when we get into extended family, it just gets complicated, and I don't know that you can please everyone. And if anybody has, you know, put it on Facebook if you have a way to please everyone. But I think that's one of the really tough things we face, because all the grandparents want to be involved and all the cousins and all the whatever. And so we're just making some really hard decisions. I guess maybe what I want to say to people is, yeah, you're making really hard decisions, and just let everybody involved know that you're really trying and caring about them. So reaching out to the extended family, they aren't there part of the family council, but you can reach out however you do. I mean, I email a lot. Other people meet over coffee or call on the phone, you know, like a real phone call like you and I are doing. They, however works, just let everybody know you really care about them and you're doing your best in this difficult situation, and it will get you a long way.
You know, I'm thinking about a family council meeting, which we both now agreed is really important for everybody for all kinds of reasons. And then I'm thinking about that child who is so angry or hurt or frightened or whatever by the fact that he or she is now in a new family, that they are just oppositional all day long. They have nothing good to say to anybody. They don't want to talk to anybody. They refuse to have a relationship with the incoming parent, if you will. What do you do with that?
I love the question, because that's the only way that they know to be heard. And I would go into what Carl Rogers called active listening, to go back a few decades, and it's called all kinds of things, but where you just go, I know you're really hurting. I know this is really hard. And just to keep them safe and to reassure them, I personally do not want to see that child punished, just because in my experience, it works best to say, yeah, I know this is really hard. I know this is how we've always done it. And just maybe they'll go in their room for a while and have a tantrum and do whatever they do, but to just keep trying to give voice to their feelings and reassure them. Maybe you have to say, I know it's tough, but this is what we have to do. So I'm not saying that the parents don't have to set some guidelines and boundaries, but just to say, I know it's upsetting. I know it's difficult, and not require their feelings behind it. So maybe they have to cooperate in going to the other cousins for dinner.
I see.
But they don't have to be happy about it. They don't have to smile when they do it.
Okay, fair enough. Is there a time that a marriage or a blending can happen too quickly? You're obviously, if these two families are coming together, something's different. There's a loss somewhere, whether it's a divorce or an accident or a death or whatever it is, there's been a loss. Is it reasonable to say, well, I should not come together with my person and his or her family for 6 weeks, 6 months, a year? I want a list. I want you to give me a list of what I should do as I approach blended family status.
The thing that came to mind was, everybody else has read this earlier, but I just read the five languages of love and that in love experience that happens immediately, and then you just can do everything. And if parents can just hang on through that period, because you just think you're going to have a perfect family and you're going to love their kids, this is a possibility. And everything's going to just be so wonderful because you're in that crazy in love stage. And I would counsel parents to enjoy that and celebrate it and celebrate each other and love being in love, but to also give some time to each other, and then have some, and a lot of times you need agreement with the bio parents on when to introduce this other person into the kids' lives. A lot of couples that are doing well have an agreement with the bio parent. Okay, I'm going to date this person X long before we introduce the kids, and have a process. So first you come together and you really get your relationship solid. Then you introduce the kids and really give them some time together. My son's kids and stepkids, anyways, blended family, they've really spent a lot of time just with those kids, having a little time together and then more time together, then more time together, giving the kids space. Like I said, the kids came up with what to call these parents, these adults in their lives. And really give that whole period of everybody getting to know each other some time before you formalize it, because when you then get, quote, married, if that happens, and it doesn't happen in all blended families, but if you then move into a marriage all by itself brings in so many expectations. So many people have told me, many parents have said, well, we were fine, and then we got married, and everything changed, because there are all those expectations that come in. So that would be my list. Is that a list? Do you want?
That's a list. I would love, now what I want you to give me is the magic pill that makes sure that every blended family absolutely works, and they work within 30 days, and everybody rides off into the sunset. And if you've got that magic pill, I'd like to share the proceeds with you.
Yeah. You know, that calls to mind how much we have to really shout out and applaud all the parents trying so hard. And we have to say, sometimes when it hasn't worked out, it's not that everybody didn't try so hard.
Yeah.
They just tried their best, and it just was more than they could take on. And then there are the families that have tried so hard and it's working, and then there are families that it was just kind of magical and it worked. Marcel Silveiro's story, Blended, is like that. It's just, this second husband was the love of her life, and they blended the kids, and the kids were part of the wedding, and it just all worked. So there's that scenario too. And again, back to the theme of stories, that's why I hope that Blended has something for everyone that will resonate with the reader, because there is this huge variety of how blended families work out.
And, you know, the other thing that I think about, I agree with you that there is a huge variety of types of blended families, and there are huge variety of the way they work out. And at the risk of repeating myself, I think about some years back, running into blended families, one member or the other, who were really pleading for some sort of information, some sort of place to go to share their own experiences, and not really feeling like they had that. Or the, you know, in the blended family, when now the primary caregiver is the grandparent versus a parent. So many things that can be so difficult.
I'm glad you brought that one up, because I have three friends involved in that, actually, where the grandparent has become the parent. The grandparent is either fostered or formally adopted the child for a whole variety of reasons, and that is another kind of family. Another thing that popped into my head was, I mentioned online that there are a lot of forums online to share stories and share them on my Facebook page. You can also just, if they Google step-parent forums, there are lots of them.
Okay.
But for parents without partners, popped into my mind, if you want a real-life situation, I'll bet there are, I'm in Portland, Oregon, and here I just know this city. There are a lot of, quote, meetups, and some of those are around single parents with children. And you don't just need to meet somebody to date. You just start meeting people in your situation, you know, other girlfriends, other whatever.
So there are lots of ways to reach out in today's world, a lot easier than in years gone past. Samantha,
and you really need to. You really, you know, some people, winter's coming on, it's dark, it's gray. Some people have a hard, well, it is here. Some people have a harder time just like getting out of the house to do that. And I really encourage everybody to find other people that are either in this situation or they can talk to about this situation. We all need a lot of support.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Samantha Walls, editor of Blended, writers on this step family experience. Thank you so much for spending time with us today.
It has been so much fun. I have really loved the opportunity to talk about all this. And I so appreciate your putting this topic out there. Besides promoting the book, I'm passionate about how important this topic is, how important it is to support all the people involved in blended families.
So, absolutely.
Again, thank you so much for the opportunity.
My pleasure. And folks, thank you for joining us today on this edition of Mind Talk. Mind Talk is brought to you daily as an educational public service, and it is not intended to replace any work that you might choose to do with a licensed medical, mental health, or other professional. Mind Talk is produced by Jim Brown and 26x2 Communications. It is available to you on demand by going to myndtalk.org. You can also subscribe to the Mind Talk podcast via iTunes and download the Mind Talk app from iTunes. You can also download the Mind Talk app from Google Play. So there are lots of ways to stay tuned to Mind Talk. And I'd love to know where in the world you are as you're listening to this edition of Mind Talk. So do send an email to me, Pamela, P-A-M-E-L-A, at mindtalk.org. Again, that's myndtalk.org. And folks, remember always, if it's unacceptable, then it is unacceptable. You take care.